The Fan on Demand. Now more of the Andrew Crystal Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Andrew Crystal with you. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stone.
NHL fervor can be found in any of Canada's seven NHL cities. But what makes TO different is our sheer size. Leafs are the richest NHL team there is. Charge the highest prices, they rake in the most dough, and produce the biggest profits. But that's what happens. You play in the Canadian market of 6 million people. A market that lines up to pay $100 for an average ticket. This is Toronto, a city that can take a second NHL team. It's a beautiful day. There we are. It is a beautiful day. Mark Harrison joins us. Mark Harrison, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well. Look, first of all, you're the president of Trojan One Sports Marketing, and you've been looking into this corporate sponsorship idea for Toronto for a while. What people don't know is that the city of Toronto, every 7 years or so, has the city of Halifax superimposed upon it. And the city that existed 10 years ago is not the city that we have today or that we'll have 10 years from now. This is an increasingly dynamic market. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I think that when you think about what Toronto was when I was a little kid growing up and cheering for the Leafs of Davey Keon and Jacques Plante and what it is today and where the sports business has gone, and when you look over at the success of MLSE with basketball teams and hockey team and restaurants and real estate, it's obviously a very different and larger community, and especially on the corporate side where, you know, we've got just a preponderance of major international corporations headquartered here.
And we have, as a result of the emerging markets with China and the revitalization of Russia following the collapse of the Soviet system and their newfound oil wealth with increased commodity prices, we not only have because we have an oil buck, too, a petrodollar. We have a better marketplace. We have a more competitive dollar. And we have more international investment than we've ever had, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've tracked down the person who bought that $28 million condo the other day, but
I bet they're not from Canada.
Yeah, they're not. And, you know, the influx of South Asian communities and to your point, you know, Russian investors has a big impact. So it's an interesting point you make because the face of our city is changing at the grassroots end with, obviously, you know, we are the most multicultural city you could possibly find, and also at a business end. You go into a boardroom today, and it does not look like the boardroom of even 10 or 15 years ago.
Now, in the Wall Street Journal, as reported yesterday, China is responsible for Vancouver's housing boom.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the picture of that house that recently went. It was in the journal yesterday for $1.2 million. I've got a little, a little King Charles Spaniel poodle. I'm not sure I'd put him in there. But it went for $1.2 million and just a huge boom. And I think that's going to continue across the country.
And the purpose for me to enumerate such things this afternoon is that Toronto increasingly can support a second team. My question to callers, though, if the Leafs are decent and competitive, like the Detroit Red Wings perennially, would you want a second NHL team? I still vote yes. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, *590. I think the competition would be good for the Leafs too, Mark. Competition is good for everybody, isn't it?
Well, I think so. And listen, I get it from an MLSE standpoint. If I had the biggest, richest, most diverse market under my thumb, why would they want to give anything up? I remember years ago when the NFL debate really got heated about Toronto, I heard a speaker at a conference say that if the NFL tore up their league structure and took all the cities in North America and said, we're going to start from scratch in terms of number of head offices, media outlets, fans. So they looked at all business dimensions. I think the stat was that Toronto would have been awarded the eighth NFL franchise. So that's NFL. And so when you think about it from an NHL standpoint, I mean, I was quoted recently as saying that I feel that Toronto could actually afford 2.5 teams and support 2.5 teams. People have been teasing me about the half, but I think when you look at, we have a Canadian sponsorship community. Our most recent study shows that corporate sponsorship is about $1.55 billion in this country. And I would argue that a good 70-plus percent of that is coming out of Toronto offices. You look at the fan base, you look at the size of the city, there's no question. I mean, the analogy I would give you is there's more than one Canadian Tire in Toronto. There's more than one McDonald's. There's more than one Tim Hortons.
Having the NHL's largest Canadian market all to themselves has been very, very good for the Leafs. I don't know if they would be hurt if a second team set up shop. I mean, take a look at the Yankees. They've got the Mets. Look at the Rangers with the Islanders and the Devils. Look at the Lakers. Look at the Cubs.
Yeah, look.
All are great examples of having to face another team in their city without a problem.
Absolutely. When you think about Toronto as a city, those examples you gave, they're very much, we are a Chicago. We are a New York. We are a Los Angeles. And I wouldn't suggest this for a second, that the Leafs and their organization, their owners and their investors, shouldn't get a substantial payment, because obviously we've been diminishing the equity of that current organization. But I think that after you tumble the numbers, let's say that was $1 billion, I think you could still argue that a second team in this city, because you've got three major television outlets that would want to be its host broadcaster, you go down every sponsorship category, whether it be telecommunications, financial services, automotive, beverages, high tech, all of those categories have not just a second player, but in some cases four or five players that could afford to pony up the way that the Leafs are extracting from the marketplace right now.
I actually think it would be good for both. I think there would be more hockey interest and more advertising revenue, not less.
I completely agree with you, and I think a parallel to that would be the impact of the Winter Olympics on this country, where obviously certain organizations were successful in getting, the category exclusivity for their business in their business category. It basically drove the other competitors in that category, not necessarily to ambush, but to examine the power of sponsorship and sponsorship marketing and reaching their consumers that way. And the research that I mentioned that we've done over the last 5 years through the Institute for Sports Marketing has shown that corporate sponsorship has gone up. To your point on tickets, there's no question that the demand for tickets in this community is much larger than what the ACC could hold. I can attest that, being a season ticket holder at the Leafs, that even in the quote-unquote dog days of March, when I offer those tickets to somebody, they are met with incredible enthusiasm. And then you go on and on. And I think competition in general is a good thing. And I think when you've got two or three players going after the same customer base, you're going to see innovation. You're going to see new approaches. And you're going to see a diversification in thinking.
I reflect upon the comment Bob McCowan made to me. He had an important guest flying in to see him. Couldn't get Leaf tickets.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And I think that, obviously from a on-ice performance, lots of Toronto fans have their challenges with what we've seen. But as a business and an operating entity, I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find an organization in Canada that outperforms MLSE.
But when the most dominant broadcaster, in the private corporate world can't get Leaf tickets, there's a problem.
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible, and it's so, to your point, having a team, a second team, would obviously help with that that demand. And I think, quite frankly, it would be good for both teams and the NHL to have a situation where, and for me, it's not just Toronto. I mean, obviously, the success in Winnipeg recently, and let's hope they get to their 13,000. And I would love to see a team in Quebec City personally. And
okay, before we talk about Quebec and Winnipeg, I really do want to visit with you on this. Mark Harrison, president of Trojan One Sports, talking about corporate sponsorship available to Toronto. A second Toronto team, I believe, will be here within 5 years. Do you agree?
That's a bold statement. I'd love to agree.
It's a result of the diminishment of the current crop of NHL teams, you know, the Columbuses, the Floridas, the Phoenixes. I think we're going to see relocation again.
I would love to see it. If you're asking me flat out, I would be surprised. But then again, I'm sure that...
Don't you think there's a reason the Teachers Pension Fund want to sell the Leafs? I think that this is... They feel that this is the highest the Leaf stock will go, and that the waters will be muddied with the advent of a second Toronto team here, and that there's a 5 to 10 year window, and I would say more like a 5 to 8 year window, that seriously there's a second team in TO and either Markham or whatever.
I'd want to be selling the Leafs the day after it's confirmed that a second franchise is going to come to Toronto and that there's $1 billion licensing fee being paid to the Leafs. Because I think if they sell today, they lose that value. And that value, to me, is inherent in that business. So the example I would give, if you brought a franchise business to Canada and you're the master franchisee, if you're just the one store...
But why sell the team now?
I wouldn't sell it. Why do you think they want to sell it now?
Yeah.
I think that there's probably a couple of things. One is the team itself obviously is at a very strong value, and I wonder if there's a concern that if the lack of success, not just with the Leafs but the other franchises, is actually going to drag that value down. And I know this isn't a soccer conversation, but this is the first year you've been able to access TFC tickets, so maybe the concern there. Or maybe it's the upside of all these real estate and restaurant entertainment holdings from 11 to Real Sports to Maple Leaf Square are now kicking in, and somebody can see future cash flow. Other people have a little bit more of a theory that just believes that, you know, with Rogers and Shaw and CT Bell Media, and like, there's obviously a huge, in the television business, there's going to be just an unbelievable change in the marketplace over the next 4 to 5 years. With all, you know, sports has become the number one driver of, you know, it's the real reality television. It's consistent, it drives. Maybe Teacher sees those things and says, this is a great time to sell because people need our content. And our content is what happens on the ice.
Right.
It's what happens on the court.
So it's
what happens on the field.
Driven by the evolution of buyers.
Yeah, absolutely.
As it is by the evolution of the team and real estate holdings.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's the best response I've heard so far with regards to that question.
Great. I just hope it isn't the only response.
Mark Harrison, president of Trojan One Sports Marketing. Looking at corporate sponsorship. Okay, the Winnipeg announcement this week. As a person heavily involved in corporate sponsorship, how do you feel about the health of the Winnipeg franchise?
Well, I guess there's a couple of ways you can look at it. You can slice and dice the marketplace and say, you know, really, and can they support it, and oh, the poor Blue Bombers. But I kind of just jumped to something very simple, and that is David Thompson. I mean, this team has the richest Canadian, the single richest individual in our country behind it. So for me, I've always been a firm believer that, you know, sports franchises are best and most successful when you've got somebody who can absorb the losses and absorb the hits. And if you look at the history and litany and legacy of failed sports franchises, they're often with somebody who's gotten in over their head. And they've leveraged. So,
like the Bruce McNalls, the Pocklingtons, yeah.
Absolutely. So for me, that's the simple answer, that there's a situation here. And I just can't imagine that the commissioner and his folks, who are smart people, you know, regardless of what people think of them personally, they're smart people. Yes, they've made some mistakes, but who doesn't in business? That they couldn't have gone up on that podium without the assurances that, you know, there's a 5 to 10 year well here that exists. Obviously for Canada and, you know, for the folks in the prairies and the folks at Portage and Maine, it's fantastic. And it's, you know, it's a great opportunity for a country. I got to imagine that the broadcasters in this country are excited about it.
Very quickly, Quebec City, this market has changed since last time out, not just the Canadian dollar, but Quebec City is richer, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Quebec City, well, it is richer. They also have a very strong need to build themselves up as a city. And what I mean by that is Quebec City has seen an exodus of young people, a brain drain, if you will, and they need to make sure that city becomes relevant. So that's why you see a whole bunch of people working hard to bring the Olympics there in 2022 under You see events like Red Bull Crashed Ice, where literally the mayor of Quebec is cutting a check to have those things. And I think, you know, the success of Quebec sports franchises is proven. So, yeah, it's changed. And I think they're ready.
How inevitable is a Quebec franchise?
I would suggest that you're going to see a team in Quebec City before you'll see a second team in Toronto.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Harrison, president of Trojan One Sports, talking about corporate sponsorship, that animal in the NHL and a second Toronto team. More on this and your calls. If Toronto is competitive like Detroit year after year, do you need a second Toronto team? Would you like to have one anyway? How successful would it be? 416-870-590, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. When I come back, Glenn Hodgson, chief economist and senior vice president of the Conference Board of Canada, will weigh in on the second Toronto team debate. This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Andrew Crystal with you.
Now more of the Andrew Crystal Show on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Andrew Crystal with you. This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Glenn Hodgson, chief economist and senior vice president of the Conference Board of Canada, is here to talk about the board's publication, Playing in the Big Leagues, what makes a professional sports team successful in Canada. How you doing, Glenn?
I'm just fine, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well. We've been talking about Winnipeg and Quebec City and a second team in Toronto. Let's talk about how economic conditions for key Canadian markets have changed. Let's start first with Toronto. It's more dynamic, it's more wealthy, correct?
Yep, absolutely. More people, higher incomes. I don't think the number of head offices has grown, but it hasn't declined that much. And, of course, they're the people that buy boxes. But the single most important variable for everybody across the country is the exchange rate. And that's clearly playing in favor of pro sports franchises from coast to coast.
All right. Now, Mark Harrison from Trojan One Sports was talking about the deep pockets of David Thompson and that being a key ingredient in the success of Winnipeg. You've got a sports-minded guy who's one of the richest men in the world.
Right, but he's not in the business of losing money either. So it's nice to have owners with deep pockets, but you probably want to look at the fundamentals of the market, of the team, and whether they can actually afford to pay salaries at the level of the salary cap in the NHL, for example, and whether selling 15,000 seats in a building, which is a very small building, at average of 80 or 90 bucks, will fill the building every night, and the Jets can actually, or whatever they're going to be called, will actually break even.
Is it tenuous? Is it a tenuous proposition?
We think it's better than even odds that the franchise is going to survive, but we're still talking about the smallest market in the league with the smallest building. And people there were used to paying 50 bucks to see a game back in the mid-90s, and now they're going to have to pay a lot more than that. So there may be a little bit of a sticker shock effect when the fans in Winnipeg actually have to start shelling out money for season tickets.
Glenn, do you think it's going to be successful? You say better than average. That's sort of like saying it's you have a fair chance, which doesn't sound great. Well, that's like 6 out of 10, right?
Yeah, I think it'll probably succeed because I suspect that the local politicians all got on the bandwagon right away, and it would be very hard to allow the franchise not to succeed now. So, for example, would it be easy for Manitoba to allow some lottery revenues to flow to the team? They'll probably find a way for that to happen.
But should that occur? I mean, they've got the biggest child poverty rate in the country. I mean, at night you see zombies walking around Winnipeg. I mean, there's serious poverty issues.
I grew up in Winnipeg, and I know the town very well, Andrew, so I know exactly what you're saying. It probably is not the very highest social priority, but, you know,
is it moral to do that for provincial dollars with all of the concerns in Winnipeg? Is it moral and ethical for that money to go to a sports franchise owned by one of the richest men on the planet?
It wouldn't be the highest priority, but that might be the condition for actually having the team there. Because as I do the arithmetic, I mean, I live in Ottawa, so Ottawa is kind of a comparable market, much more than Toronto is. The Senators have to make about $100 million a year for the franchise to be sustainable. Winnipeg is going to be hard-pressed to get to 100. Even getting to, say, $85 million a year as revenue will be a bit of a stretch, so there may be a need for other sources to step up. moral, ethical. Well, I'm not an ethicist, but I have views on social priorities as well. And pro sports wouldn't be at the top of the list. But at the same time, arguably it's going to make the community, the province, feel a lot better about themselves, and there may be some positive spin-off benefits from that. So there's a huge scope for debate around the ethics of state support for pro sports.
I think it's outrageous and disgusting if David Thompson allows that to happen, given the needs of the people in Winnipeg. Quebec City, it's a richer market now.
By far. More people, higher incomes, same sort of story plays out. And, of course, the mayor has gotten elected by promising to bring a team back to Quebec City. Their big challenge is their building is archaic, and so they have to find a way to build a building with as much private money as possible, but probably with significant public sector support as well.
How will the U.S. and its attempt to raise the debt ceiling, et cetera, affect the NHL and the viability of having discretionary dollars flow into the NHL in some areas, regions of America that have been hard hit by the liquidity crisis or market meltdown? Your U.S. is a very difficult recovery, and that translates into tough ticket sales in some markets. There's still a long way to go for America to get out of this. How is this impacting things? Canada's okay, relatively speaking, but America's not. How does this work with the NHL?
Boy, I wish I lived in the Toronto market and could hear your show more often, because that's kind of the biggest issue facing North America's future, and I talk a lot about that as a chief economist. America is in a very deep fiscal hole right now. You're absolutely right. That's playing out very differently in different parts of the country. So pro sports, I'll turn it into a pro sports story. So pro sports in the rich markets in states where the economy is working okay are probably in okay shape. They'll keep grinding along. But I think anybody who's at the margins in a city or a region that's been deeply affected by the recession and the recovery and the fact that America has a lot of problems to go through, they are going to be constrained by an economy that will probably underperform over the next 5 to 10 years. So you start looking at the more marginal NHL markets, for example, and there's a good reason to ask questions about their long-term survival.
Is the Paul Martin approach to cutting debt, would that work in America?
Probably not, because a lot of the things that Mr. Martin did back in the mid-90s was to push the problem to the next level of government. And as you might recall, there was really a pushing down of things like health spending, where the feds withdrew a lot of their support. And that passed the ball to provinces, who then passed the ball to the cities for things like social support. America doesn't have a lot of state support for healthcare except through Medicare and Medicaid. And right now they're already propping up a lot of state governments who are probably not far from bankruptcy on their own. So America's in a really difficult situation, but that sort of a trickle-down, negative trickle-down effect, I'll call it, probably does not work in the United States. They're going to have to really suck it up and take some tough decisions about sustainability of Social Security, the government-funded pension plans, support for seniors, support for low-income people. It's really going through a very, very difficult series of decisions.
When it comes to discretionary income, never mind heritage sports in Sunbelt markets like, for example, NASCAR or basketball, discretionary dollars are going to be tighter. We're going to see more problems in the NHL. Let's talk about problem NHL franchises. Where do you see the bloom coming off the rose?
Well, from the bottom up, we already know the first two. The owners in Atlanta had reached the point where they got tired of throwing money into a black hole, and they've sold the franchise. I'm astounded that the city of Glendale is writing a check for $25 million a year to the NHL just to keep the team in their building. Of course, the building is effectively a stranded asset, and I've been to Phoenix, and Glendale's the wrong side of the city. The building should have been built in Scottsdale or Mesa.
It is.
So they're clearly in trouble.
Morons.
Florida hasn't made the playoffs in a very long time, and their fan base is eroding. And
Florida's done. Florida's done.
Tampa, long way from downtown.
Tampa Bay will survive, but Florida's done. The Florida market is depressed. You can get a house there for half a sandwich now.
You're pointing to all the problems in the housing markets in the United States. You're exactly right. Florida's is going through a very, very difficult period right now. So we're already on the three on the list with more to come. You wonder about Columbus because they haven't made the playoffs in a long time. And you see fan support bleeding away, and that's in the Rust Belt. So that's the part of America that's really deeply affected by the recovery and what's happening in manufacturing, although there's a little bit of evidence that the manufacturing sector in the U.S. is coming back, that a lot of the jobs that were offshored will find their way back to the United States.
At the expense of the U.S. dollar, though.
No, really driven by the fact that U.S. dollar is trading at $1.40 against the euro, for example, making the U.S. a lot more competitive. And then you can add in Nashville, which had a great playoff experience this year, but isn't in a traditional hockey market.
Somebody should hang Alan Greenspan after the 2001 tech bubble burst. They should have raised interest rates. Alan Greenspan is a huge villain.
I like the fact that you have a wandering mind, Andrew. You raise a lot of issues.
Well, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, and so I'm just getting as much in as I possibly can. But an event like that affects sports, specifically the NHL today, period.
It affects the entire economy, and arguably, you know, the pro sport dollar is the last dollar that we spend as consumers. We have to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, pay for our mortgage, make car payments, make sure the kids get to school. And only when we have a few dollars left over do we have a choice between, am I going to the ballet, the movies, or a professional hockey game? So you're right. As the economy gets impacted by financial crisis, problems, recession, and people start to save more, because average American is now saving about 5% of every paycheck, whereas in 2007 they were spending more than their paycheck, that all has an impact on the money left over in people's wallets to spend on discretionary things like pro sports.
Two big factors, not just interest, not just hereditary interest in hockey, but the nature of the Canadian market and the condition of our banks and the price of our houses has meant a healthier Canadian representation in the NHL. And that's why the NHL seems to be a better league than the rest. Let's talk about the economic viability of sports leagues right now. I know you're doing a study on that.
It'll be out in the next 3 weeks or so.
Okay, how does the NHL shape up? I would say pretty good, given the fact there's so much Canadian representation.
Well, clearly the NHL has the potential for some growth markets. You're right, Canada is in much better shape than the U.S. market right now. We had unemployment jump up a little bit, but we basically replaced all the jobs we lost during the recession. Incomes are rising, and there's other growth market potential in Canada. I think the NFL is still the strongest, although they're going through a crazy work stoppage right now, which may end up hurting their brand on a going forward basis. But compare the TV contracts that the NFL has compared to the NHL, and it's mind-blowing. $20 billion in revenue this year from the broadcasters is spread amongst the NFL franchises. That the same number for the NHL next year will be about $350 million. So that's a huge, huge difference, like 50 to 1 difference.
How healthy is Major League Baseball?
It's going through growing pains or real pain, because we think fundamentally the problem with baseball is the fact that they don't have a hard salary cap and they don't share much revenue. So there are clearly franchises that are getting left behind right now. I don't know why anybody goes to a baseball game, for example, in a place like Pittsburgh unless they really love baseball, because the Pirates are not the same Pirates they were back in the 70s. You know, when they were winning everything, they're kind of competing for fourth or fifth every season. And at the top end, the Yankees and the Red Sox can go out and buy market share and buy the best free agents. So baseball is a very tiered or stratified market where some franchises succeed and others are getting left more and more behind, although there are exceptions. I mean, I noticed, for example, that Kansas City actually had a pretty good start to their season, even though they're a small market team.
I got to bring you back, Len. We got to go to a break, sell some products. You know, tax money doesn't pay for the show like you hear elsewhere. Glenn Hodgson, thank you so much. Chief Economist and Senior Vice President of the Conference Board of Canada, talking about the economic health of sports leagues, specifically the NHL and Canadian cities. When I come back, more, including a biting incident for which there is no penalty. Apparently, Burroughs didn't intentionally bite the finger of Bergeron. Have you ever heard of such madness? This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. Now more of the Andrew Crystal Show on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Glenn Hodgson, Chief Economist and Senior Vice President of the Conference Board of Canada, is here to talk to us about the health of sports leagues. Also a second team in TO.
This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Glenn, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Some folks want to take some calls. We want to take some calls. Some folks want to call in, rather. Let's go to, let's go to George and Hamilton before I go to John and Grimsby. George, welcome. Thanks for calling. You there, George? We've lost George. Let's go to Bob and Tio. Bob, go ahead, sir.
Listen, I just want to say that I'm a little bit disheartened at all of the people that are complaining about how, Winnipeg is just this down-and-out city and that it is worthless, has no redeeming values at all. The opportunity to put a professional hockey team back in Winnipeg is the opportunity to rebuild the city. A corporation is going to take and relocate, and that's the start. It's going to be contagious.
That's a very good point, Bob. Let's talk about the effect of an NHL team as far as being like a loss leader, like a trade center, for example. Is there an economic argument in favor of a hockey team for a market?
Well, there's certainly an opportunity for a city to rebrand itself as a big league city. And Winnipeg psychologically lost that when the Jets left back in 96. So at that level, as kind of a marketing vehicle, it's good for cities to have professional sports teams. But remember, they're not really creating a lot of wealth within the market because the dollars that are spent on hockey tickets are dollars that are taken away from other things. Only if you attract a huge number of visitors would there be kind of a net inflow of cash for the Winnipeg market. But I would agree with the caller that having a pro sports team doesn't hurt in terms of the profile of the city and selling it to investors and to visitors.
Okay. But it almost, there's the same economic argument that exists as far as a drain on the market. For example, Walmarts and casinos. Walmarts are a negative in a community. They suck out from smaller retailers, and money goes back to Arkansas. And additionally, lotteries or casinos, rather, although they have high-paying jobs, relatively speaking, they take market out of a community. Correct?
Yeah, you're moving dollars around between different potential uses. I actually think one of the most important assets in pro sports for Canada is our players. Canadian players who are playing in the United States, there are more American franchises than anything else. 50% of the players are Canadians, and if they save money and bring it back to Canada, that's a huge transfer of wealth from the American market back to Canada. Probably more important, frankly, than the sort of net contribution of any of the franchises within Canada.
I've not heard anybody describe that.
Well, think of Sidney. You know, Sidney Crosby makes, $9 million a year now. He may be investing in the Pittsburgh area of the States, but he may also be taking some of that back to home in Coal Harbour, Nova Scotia, and investing in property for himself, for his family. He may be an eventual buyer of a junior hockey team, other businesses. So that's a really interesting source of...
Yeah, and, by the way, I think the biggest branding mistake Halifax ever made is not insisting on saying it came from Halifax, because Coal Harbour is a suburb of Halifax. Everybody there works in Dartmouth or whatever. I mean, outrageous. Like, people know where Halifax is. They have no idea in heck where Coal Harbour is. That's a huge branding error to keep maintaining this Coal Harbour thing.
People probably know where Cranbrook is because of the Niederbryers. The Niederbryers playing in the NHL.
Right. Second Toronto team. When are we going to see this?
Whenever somebody ponies up with a territorial fee, ensures they have a building that's big enough, and convinces the Leafs that they're not going to suck away half of the broadcast revenue. So it's nice in theory because clearly the Toronto market is big enough to sustain a second NHL team. I mean, there's probably at least 5 million people within the near area, maybe as many as 8 million within an hour, hour and a half drive of a team. But there's a lot of hurdles to get over before a second Toronto team is going to find its way into the NHL.
Is this an inevitability, a second Toronto team?
Really depends upon how big a check someone's prepared to write.
What's your take on it? Do you think it's going to happen?
I think go through all the factors that are required for that. So you need someone with deep pockets as an owner. You need a quality building. And Cops Coliseum is a good building, but it clearly would have to have enhancements. You know, it needs more seats and more boxes. If you land in Hamilton, you probably have to pay part of the fee to Buffalo as well. So there's a number of conditions before you get there.
But the economic case can be made for a second team in TO, though.
Oh, absolutely.
So, paying off the Leafs.
Yeah, by virtue of market size, income, access to the broadcast market, we all know about Toronto media and sports media. So there's a lot of pent-up demand for a second team in the Southern Ontario area, absolutely.
All right, so how soon will Quebec City get a team?
I think it's all a question of the weakening financial conditions of some other franchises and whether Quebec is going to build a building on spec or wait until they actually land something and then play in the Colisée for a year or two before their building is built, which, of course, is what happened in Ottawa when the Senators landed here. They played at the Civic Center for, what, 3 or 4 years while the building got built.
And the NHL is pretty healthy relative to other leagues, correct?
It's healthy, but it has its weak sisters as well. And so far, the other owners have been prepared to prop up those weak owners. Although it's really interesting for me the fact that the league managed to take $60 million out of the sale of the Thrashers to Winnipeg, presumably to cover a lot of back costs that the league had incurred keeping the team in Atlanta alive. So yes, it's healthy at a high level. But owners are required to shell out to protect some of the weaker franchises.
What about Kansas City, Portland, Seattle? What about these Vegas? Are there any other viable American markets?
Well, let's work backwards. Seattle probably is saturated with trying to get an NBA team right now, has an NFL team, has a soccer team, has a baseball team. Great facilities in Seattle. I was there just after Christmas. And the new buildings they put together are fantastic there, but there may be a market saturation issue. Portland might be a little bit better bet because it doesn't have sort of top-tier sports in other areas except for the NBA. Therefore, there's a building. Kansas City, I don't know. You would think there's a natural rivalry between St. Louis, Kansas City, Chicago, maybe Nashville, which is always attractive because then you're going to fill your building for those games. But it's not a huge market, and it's not a really rich market, but it's not as badly hit as the Rust Belt or the Sun Belt either.
Tampa Bay is going to be healthy, I think.
They seem to have gotten over the hump. A smart owner and a great management team in place. You know, Steve Yzerman did a fantastic job this year turning around an okay franchise into a pretty good franchise.
All right, Glenn Hodgson, any final words?
No, this has been really a lot of fun. I hope that your readers will take a look at our website, conferenceboard.ca. Our articles are going to be up there, and there's many more to come. So thank you for the time, Andrew, to have a chance to chat about this.
Thanks so much, Glenn Hodgson. I really appreciate it. Glenn Hodgson, Chief Economist and Senior VP of the Conference Board of Canada, talking about hockey markets across Canada and the health of sports leagues and teams. This just in, you may have heard it on our update, the NHL will not suspend Vancouver Canucks forward Alexander Burrows. The league says there was no evidence that Burrows intentionally put the finger of Patrice Bergeron in Game 1. Intentionally, no evidence that he intentionally bit the finger. Have you ever heard of anything so insane? It makes about as much sense as Anthony Weiner, the congressman. You know, I am outraged by this. Let's face it. The league just doesn't want to suspend Burrows because Vancouver would be outraged. It's politics. Don't tell me that that's a fair and rational call. No evidence that Burrows intentionally bit the finger. So what? It was a reflex? He just decided, I'm going to bite this. It's just absolutely outrageous. We'll be doing this tomorrow. I'll be taking your calls on this. There seems to be one rule for Vancouver and another rule for other players. Think about this. If that was a Boston Bruin, don't you think something would have happened? I do. I think there's a double standard here. Well, we'll take a look at it. And we'll get your calls on that tomorrow. McCowan is next.